Please welcome Michael Kaplan.
Thank you. So my wife and I went up to Napa to visit her friend Anne Marie. The two of them had worked in downtown LA at a law firm, and then when my wife Susan had met me, we fled to the Central Coast. Anne Marie had gone to Africa on a trip and had fallen in love with her safari guide, this dashing British fellow named Ross, and they ended up getting married and they relocated to Napa, and so now we went up to visit them, and they just had a little baby, and Ross's mom was there, just adorable little British woman sitting at the table with her teacup. And we were all sitting around and catching up, and they were asking me about my writing career, which was really flopping about like a fish at the bottom of the boat. And you know, I was explaining, well, there was one producer who was interested in one of my scripts, and I'd just gone through a writer's strike, and there wasn't a lot of work happening. I was just basically making excuses and making complaints. And then the two women left the table to go do something with the baby. And then Ross went to walk his dog. And so I'm sitting there with Ross's mom, who looks over her teacup at me and says, "Harry Potter, why didn't you think of that?" And, you know, I didn't go to finishing school, but I had a sense that saying, "Get off my fucking back," was not going to be appropriate in that situation. But I was kind of stymied as far as how I was supposed to respond. And in fact, this was the second time that week that I had kind of been, you know, rocked back on my heels. The earlier one had been my wife and I. We were living in Venice down south at the time. And one evening, we heard a crash. And I looked out the window, and two cars had collided. And in what seemed, you know, within minutes, the police were there. Everybody was gathered outside. I turned to my wife. I said, "Should I go out and talk to the cops?" And she gave me the tiniest eye roll and said, "You're just going to tell them stories." And that was true. That was absolutely true. There's no defending myself about that. And I come by it honestly. It's in my blood. My father was an excellent storyteller, and the dinner time was basically his to hold forth. But he was very entertaining. He told us stories about what was going on at his office or what might have happened at lunch. And it was engaging. And then when he got older, he and my mother did a lot of traveling. And he would come back again with really terrific stories about the people that they had met or odd things that they had observed in foreign lands. But then he got even older and became the cliche of the old Jewish man who comes back from a trip and just tells you what he had to eat and how long he had to wait for things. Nevertheless, it's in me, this desire to tell stories or just go through some kind of artistic act. And I believe that the act of creation, whether you are, you know, writing music or playing music, painting a picture, writing a poem, making jewelry, working on a sculpture, even writing jokes, you know, or getting up there performing, it's a sacred process. And when it is going right, you lose yourself in it. And you get to dip your toes in that collective and electric creative river that is just out there flowing. And I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of artists talk about how they were just channeling what was coming through them, that they sort of surrendered to it. And again, I think that is a profound moment, but it's fleeting. And then the moment it's over, people feel bereft or a little panicked. And so they look at what they've made and they immediately put their name on it, because that at least is compensation for no longer having their toe in the river. They can at least trade it maybe for some applause or approbation of some kind, or even money. And if you lose track of that, then that's what you end up getting addicted to. And in my years in Hollywood and in my years of wanting to get back to Hollywood, I wasn't writing for the beauty of the creative act. I was writing for the commerce of it, for the market. I was trying to gauge out what were they going to want next. And that's like trying to shave while you're looking at another person instead of in the mirror. And at the point when I decided that was a sucker's game and kind of a soul-killing game, I found Slolio. And I've been coming here for almost 5 years, and I want to say happy anniversary, and I want to say to Kirk, thank you, because it is really a special event. And if I could, I now know what I would say to Ross's little British mum at the table when she asked me, Harry Potter, why didn't you think of that? I would have said, it's not my story to tell. And I've been coming here long enough to understand that there are maybe three things that make a wonderful story. One is that, you know, it needs a voice. It's sort of the point of view or perspective that is truly your own. It needs an event or a series of events that are in their own way interesting. And it needs a theme. It can be the one that Kirk has chosen, or it can be one that you come to on your own, and it picks it up, and it takes it from this happened to me to this happens to us. And that is something that I'm still trying to get right, and will keep coming here to do so. And you know, if I come across a future crime scene, I will tell the cop stories. And I think that they'll enjoy them as long as I don't tell them what I had to eat and how long I've been waiting for things. Thank you.